Nick also wanted to take a few minutes to maybe answer some questions about some opportunities and things that that he would have. We're praying and anticipating some opportunities to work in over in Nick's region, not the areas that he's working in right now. But those are coming, and so we're really excited about some opportunities that we're going to have working with him. But I wanted to share the time with him tonight, and we're going to talk to you just a little bit about opportunities that we have this summer to work with Focus. How many of you have stopped by the booth and at least picked up either the brochure or business card to visit our website? Okay. If you've not done that and you have some interest in Focus projects this summer, pick up the business card. You can pick some of these up, but they're about gone. So the business card has the website on it. The website has all of our projects listed on it. You'll need to, it has a username and password to get into the website, and then you can set up your own username and password to get in to the application part of that. What I'd like to do is to have Kyle talk to you about the projects that we have this summer, and because I don't have a clue, I can read them to you off the back here, but most of you guys can do that, and then we'll take some time to answer some questions, see what questions you might have related to the project. Let me just say a word or two about them. I think that will help, and then Kyle can talk some about specific projects and maybe answer some of the questions that you would have related to some specific projects. All of the projects, the price range is going to be some. If you average it out, it's probably going to be around $3,200. Some are going to be a little more, some are going to be a little less, but that is all inclusive. That includes your passport. If you already have one, you can subtract that amount. It includes everything except transportation to and from orientation. And orientation is required. You can't go if you don't go to orientation. For some of you, transportation from orientation will be transportation to the field, wherever it is you're serving. And some of you will actually leave from orientation to go to wherever it is that you've chosen to go. Maybe a day or so later, but I think, do we know yet? Are there any? There are some projects that will be leaving just a day or so after orientation run. All of the projects will be partnering you with university students in the places where you'll be going. Some of those you'll be teaching. You're thinking, oh, good grief, I can't teach. If you can speak English, the kind of teaching we do, you can do. Some of you, I know that's a problem, but we can help you with that. We can help you learn that. Some of you will be just conversational English, cultural exchange. There are a few projects where you would need to go and actually enroll in a class and learn language or a special project related to culture in the places where we go. You know well enough, kind of off the top of your head, which ones those are?
I don't. Several to try.
Okay. You can find that out on the website. You can visit the website and go to the projects and discover that. All of the projects are teamed, so you're not going to go anywhere by yourself. You're not going to end up on the ground where you're going by yourself. If you may be thinking, John, I don't have anyone else from my campus that's interested in going, or I want to go a place where others on my campus are not wanting to go. Can I still go since I'm not part of the team on a local campus? Yes. We'll just put you as a part of the team in the place where it is that you're looking to go, or you have an interest in going. So, Kyle, do you want to come and talk about these a little bit, and then we'll take some questions and answers, and then we'll let Nick have some time.
Sure. Like John said, all the projects that we do are team-based, and the goal the partnership with Focus is that you'd be able to send a whole team from one campus. And there's something about that, that you guys have shared some life together before going on your trip. You come back and you really pour yourself back into the ministry that you're a part of, and that becomes contagious. It's a part of discipleship. It's a part of the way that you invest in the people around you, the people that are discipling you, the ones that you're spending time with. And I think it just informs who you are as a believer and the way you continue to pursue the Lord. So not all of our trips are going to be to Mrs. Moore campus. If you're from New Mexico State University, depending on which team you go on, you might have all New Mexico State folks. Let's say you're from Gunnison, Colorado. You might be one or two folks from Gunnison that are going to be on the team with other people that you don't know. So on, if you give you a chance to grab the brochure on the back side, these are the countries that we're hoping to go to. As you apply, you can find out more specific information about the cities that we're going to go to, these places. But God's really opened some doors for us to touch a broad community, a broad spectrum of students around the world this summer. Students, Hindu students in India, Buddhist and atheist students in China, Buddhists in Southeast Asia, Muslims in Central Asia and North Africa, and even some students in Germany this summer, which is going to be a new thing for us. Students from, let's see, who all is from OU?
About a lot.
Okay. You guys are leading the charge and taking an insane amount of teams this summer. Opportunities for you guys to be in lots of different places. One of the campuses over here? SC is hoping to send a team to India. Jorge State, Kenya, and possibly a trip to China. Colorado, hopefully a couple trips to China. Well, Emporia State, hopefully China. Where else?
In the UCU, University of Central Oklahoma.
You're going to be someone who would connect with another school. It'd be great if the University of Central Oklahoma had a bunch of students that wanted to go. But at this point, hopefully we can maybe be able to connect with some other people from Oklahoma. What are the specific stuff you want to share about the project? In this brochure, there's kind of a process that you kind of walk through. February 7th, which is, I guess, a month from tomorrow, today? A couple days, Wednesday. A month from Wednesday is the application deadline. If you guys haven't had a chance to look at that, it's a pretty lengthy process. It's going to be worth it, even if you don't go on your trip, to look at the application. And just to begin to think on some of the questions that are asked. It's going to take you a while with some references. So if you're at all interested, I'd encourage you to go ahead and go onto the website and restart that application. It would be something you don't want to get caught behind on.
Let me just speak to that. I know how students operate, and every year on February the 8th, we get a phone call that says, I thought about going, I didn't get the application filled out, and I know it's past the deadline, and I get my stuff in if there's still time. It really puts us in a bind to do that. Our board meets the next weekend. We have to have everything in-house by the 14th, or the 13th is when mail is delivered. I think the 14th is a Sunday this year. And so the last day we're going to have mail delivered is going to be the 13th. And if we don't have it, it really puts us in a bind to get through it, get it read, and make team assignments. So it is going to take you some time to fill out that application. There are some questions that you're going to need to write. I'm going to use the word essay, but I know that holds different meanings for different ones of you. For some of you, that means three pages. Others, it means three sentences. And you'll have to figure out what that means for you. But it's going to take you some time. So don't wait till the last minute. It really helps us if we can have that stuff in hand in a timely manner.
Do you guys have any questions about maybe a project that your campus would be taking, or anything that you, any of the places that you want to be specific? Kind of what that project would be doing, or any logistics with?
If you do, don't hesitate to visit us at the booth. We're going to be here to help everything wrapped up. Do you have any questions about explaining why? Yeah.
If we really want to go to one of these countries, and then we have to start get put on a second charge, so
you can. Yeah, on the application, there's a kind of a freshness rating on the project that you must go on, a 1, 2, 3. And it's helpful if you tell us, you know, which of those you'd like to go on. If you just say you're from OU, that doesn't necessarily specify the places. So if you say OU this trip. There's another question on there that says, you know, are you willing to go wherever you're needed if that doesn't happen? And that's really going to help us make a decision. You know, if that team is full, or for whatever reason things fall through. You know, we're really going to ask you guys to trust us in that, and we're not going to pull you or your campus minister out of the loop. But, you know, that your answer in that, are you willing to go where you need it, can be really helpful in that part of the application.
We'll do everything we can to get you your first pick.
there are times that doesn't happen. Sometimes it doesn't happen because you may pick a place that, even though it's listed on the brochure, another campus has chosen and that team is closed. But especially if it's from your own campus, chances are really, really good that's where you're going to end up going if you're accepting the process. It may be, you may pick one that the team doesn't make at all. So we hope that all of these make, but it's possible that they wouldn't, that there might be one that wouldn't make. What else? Other questions?
It's both of the website. I mean, let's say you're not able to do it just this time, when you're like doing it next. It's both of the website.
Well, there's, you know, back at the table, there's some cards with the website address. We've password protected the site just so that you can't find it on a random internet search. There's some information on there that you'd like to secure. So on the card, it has a web address and username, password that you can find on there. So hopefully it's a little harder than www.focus, but hopefully you won't find it on the Google search. We're praying.
If you do a Google search and find us, would you please let us know? Because we need to find out how we were connected and get that stopped. Also, if you're in this room and you take care of the website for your campus, and you think, boy, this would be cool, I want to link focus to our campus website, don't do that. The reason is we work a lot with universities overseas that if they do a Google search and find us, it will put some folks at risk. So we just need your help in that.
Depending on where you go, there are several vaccinations that are independent standards, the hepatitis shots. But you know, there are some, depending on the country that you go to, we will give you some specific information on that when you're giving it to your advisor.
How many of you do not have a passport yet? Now, your first step tomorrow, if you're thinking about going next summer, your first step tomorrow is to go online and start your application for your passport. Don't wait until March or April and do that. In fact, you can't even apply until you show us proof that you've applied for your passport. That'll be your first step. We've had some students, we learned the hard way. We had a couple of students that didn't know if they'd get accepted or not. They waited until they got accepted, applied for their passport, and then couldn't go because the passport didn't come through. So that's the first thing. Go to U.S. government or type in passports in the Google search.
Make sure you do usgovernment.org.
Yeah, usgovernment.org.
Or you can go to the post office and pick up a report at the post office. You will have to have a certified copy of your birth certificate. You can't have a copy, you have to have the real deal with the stamp on it.
Is that what happens?
You know, if a team came up going and there's no terrorism or something like that, how does that happen?
We'll do everything we can to get you to another place. You know, last summer we had, well, how many? 12 or so teams that were scheduled to go to China. And with the SARS outbreak, we really felt like it was in the best interest of everyone to reroute those projects. It ended up being that a lot of the university campuses in China ended up being closed down. All the students were quarantined in, or people were quarantined out. So it would have not been helpful, even though nobody probably would have caught SARS. There just were a lot of measures that they took to try to control that. So all of those teams were successfully rerouted to another place, except one group that chose not to go. They chose to wait, and then coming back this summer to go to southwest China. So if that happens, you guys will know about it. We're not going to surprise you. At the last minute, hopefully you're not.
We might surprise anyone.
There was a team that did show up to orientation thinking they were going to Kenya and found out they were going to Uzbekistan. So that was very different. But no, barring, as John has said, barring no major world terrorist acts or another outbreak of SARS, the trips will hopefully go along like they're planned. But we don't want to send you guys any place that we know is going to be intentionally harmful to you. Now, to say everything is safe would not be true. It's not going to be safe. The reality of living here in the state is it's safe. But we really want to be good stewards of our relationship with you and your parents. And we really think seriously your parents' input into your involvement in this trip as well.
I know you usually have both men and women on the team, but would you ever do one with just men and just women?
We've done both. Yeah, we sent a group of girls to Egypt. We sent a group of guys to Kazakhstan. Yeah, we've done both. It just depends on how the team shakes out, what the workers on the field, what their counsel is in that kind of situation. So we've done both.
So when you go over, do you hook up with somebody like
Osama?
Like Nick.
Every place that we have teams going, now I think every place but two, I've been. So I'll connect with our missionaries on the field. Want to make sure that that's going to be a great experience for our teams to go. We check out housing, what that's going to look like. All of the situations that are there, we most times will meet with, if it's an actual connect with the university, I'll meet with the head of an English department or the university president to try to set that thing up. So it's all been scouted out before we go. We're not sending you any place that we haven't been and that we don't really believe the folks that are there are going to help you to have a great experience. Good question. It's also helpful when parents call, where I can say, I just got back from Afghanistan and we didn't see it.
So you said it was going to be around $3,200 to do the trip, but can you collect the money as a limit? I don't know how to
do it. Yes, you guys probably collect that through your campus ministry. Some groups will collect it through a local church. Don't send it to focus. It'd be too hard for us to try to keep track of all that for you. Is that correct, Peggy?
Sorry. Well, it was nice to
share some things with you. So
You're on, my brother.
All right. Fired up this machine. I want to show you all very quickly a slide presentation I've never used before about one of the major unreached people groups of the planet. Let's see if I can get this thing up running. I don't think we'll need to turn the lights out. Let's see if the magic of technology will work. All right, I think it will. You can. This is really a serious moment.
Millions and millions of dollars are being poured in to Ethiopia from China for some reason.
But it is opening up the country in a lot of ways that we haven't seen in my lifetime. And so we're getting out there among it. I have 11 teams, and I've got 11 teams among the 107, 110 million people. On those 11 teams, I only have one couple on seven of those. And on seven of them, I don't have a second couple. So on four of them, I might have more than that. And we have about 80 people groups, from real small to 4 to 6 million. And for the most part, they have no Christian witness whatsoever. And so we're trying to accelerate our presence among those through what we call a flame program. And what we're looking for, partners like Focus. Now, Focus is basically to students. They're short term. But we're going to work within your parameters, but also through the Journeyman ISC program. What we're trying to do is find folks who feel that God might be calling them to the Horn of Africa, to Yemen. We'll come out if you are a graduate. We'll invest 2 years in you. We'll help you come out and look at the people group teams that we've got. I've got a Yemeni cluster. I've got a Somali cluster. I've got an Orthodox cluster. I've got the Muslims of the Horn cluster. I've got an Addis Ababa, Ethiopia cluster. And we'll give you a couple of months to pray, look around, survey to see which cluster you'd like to serve on, which team you'd like to serve on, and then do some intensive language. And in the next year and a half, one or two things will happen. We'll join a team that exists and just go after it. Or we'll assign you to a people group that has little or no Christian witness, give you the tools to do ethnographic research, you and your partner, and go out there and work and live among that people group and hopefully map them, research them, make relationships with them. And then we will pray that God will call you back as a career person to open up teamwork among those people groups. So our flame program is a way of investing and growing our own folks in some of the tougher places on the planet. And I'll be honest with you, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, certainly, you know, it's like a quarter under your chair. So I'm going to see if you know I'm the first one to see that. In my opinion, as I look at missions around the world, and as we've shared, we've been able to take one of the things that God has blessed Beth and I and the boys with. We came out and we served in one of the most responsive countries in the world, in Malawi, in Central East Africa, where it was pretty cool. People come to our house and say, "There's no God in our village. Would you come and bring God to our village?" And just God and I would pitch up about three months to 6 months later, and even with all the illness and malaria that we had, we just saw God just sweep like you wouldn't believe. One of my Malawi guys heard I was in town. He's over here at Oklahoma Baptist Convention. He called me this afternoon and said, they have a pastor's meeting, went out to some buildings and baptized 1,000 people a few weeks ago. That's not what you're going to see in Yemen and Somalia. You go there and share the gospel, you might have 1,000 people chase you out of there for the first couple of times. And that takes me to another story, and I'll get back to East Africa. We had some evangelists going in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan for the last few years. The first eight times they went in there, they got beaten up and thrown out of the region. The ninth time they went back, an influential man came to know the Lord, gave them his vehicle and bodyguards to travel through the area. They've been chronological Bible historian, and they've seen now about 20,000 people baptized. And that is one of our few, but one of our better success stories. Beth and I went from a very, very, very responsive country to down to South Africa, to where missionaries have been there for about 200 years. And it's what I call a transitional mission field. It's not responsive. It's not persecutory. It's a lot like a lot of America. 9,000 Southern Baptist churches last year did not baptize anybody. That's sort of like a lot of the Southern African experience. And then we've been among the unreached. I think with some authority and some experience I can say, out of every 100 missionaries that will come from the West, particularly from Southern Baptists, 10 of them might have the mindset in the background and the potential to work in North Africa and Middle East. And out of that 10 that can work in North Africa and Middle East, it could be everything from, let's say, from Egypt over to Mauritania, up through the Middle East into the Gulf States. About one of those 10 can work in Somalia, in Djibouti, in Yemen, in Ethiopia. And they're just tougher places, a lot of poverty, a lot of leprosy, a lot of resistance to the gospel, that they just have not had a good, clear chance to hear. The areas in which we're trying to get people to serve in southern Saudi Arabia, 95% Yemeni speakers, we're going to get a couple in there, or two couples, but 15 out of the 17 hijackers at 9/11 came out of that area. Another place we have no Christian witnesses in the Hyderabad of Yemen, Osama bin Laden's home territory. And I heard on Fox News this morning that, you know, this big alert that we've had over Christmas here, orange alert. One of the major precipitator of that was intercepts they got coming out of Saudi Arabia of people infiltrating in that part of Yemen. And they were talking about ways of destroying the entire American cities. And so these are not easy places. It's going to take us a long time. We're going to build teams carefully. We're going to mentor people. We're going to do it right. But we're not going to back up. We're going to go after lost people. We're going to do it consistently. And we're not going to give up. People for generations before you have not done a good job. They've gone to the responsive, easy parts of the world, so we let you all tough things. All right? But we're going to do it without backing up. And so in a lot of this, we're going to have to grow our own. We're going to do it with younger people. We're going to do it with semester people. And we pray that God will turn you around, come back for 2 years and 3 years, and that you'll be willing to come there with wives, husbands, as singles, with your family, and do what the path takes. And so, we need folks that just seemingly have an extra special walk with Jesus, that love being in a team setting, that love being accountable to one another. What I say to my people every time they leave my house, or when I say bye to them on the phone, I'll say to them that I love them. I'll say to them that I'm praying for them, but I'll say to them, I got your back. And that's what I do. I've got the back of those on you. When you're out there and you're among full-time lost, if you don't have to worry about your back, I've got your back. And I'll see that your support system, your prayer system, and I'll keep the boogers off your back so you can concentrate on your work, okay? And so I thought with just that little bit, we're going to have to break up here in just a moment. You might have some questions. You really don't have to limit it to the Horn of Africa and Yemen, or even to just North Africa and the Middle East. Beth and I have had some extensive experience. What we want to do is to help you, and John and Peggy opened the door for us to be invited to this life impact, and my biggest concern is for you all to be where God wants you to be. All right? And so maybe you might have a couple comments or questions before we go into worship. Yes, back and back. Congo is one of the largest countries in Africa. I think the only one that's larger is Sudan. It's animistic in its background and Christian mix. It's got about 200-300 different people groups. It's got thousands and thousands of Christians, but it's got tens of thousands of lost people. But because of 30, 40 years of corruption and civil war, it's been very difficult to work there. Southern Baptists have one couple there, Rusty and Debbie Pugh, that we knew out of Kenya. They've got about 100 people groups that have little or no Christian witness. But it's still a mess. It looks like it's going in the right direction, and things may settle down to where we can put some people in on the ground in large numbers in the coming years. But Rusty and Debbie Pugh would be a great contact for you if you're interested in going, or just for information purposes. You know, it goes all the way from eastern Central Africa to almost the West Africa coast. It's a huge place, but for the last 25, 30 years, it's been a pretty brutal place as Africa goes. But it's starting to open up and settle down a little bit. And I've got some hopes. I've been on the edge of it. I've been in, I was there in Goma. Goma's now buried under a volcanic thing. It had a volcanic, how do y'all say that? The thing that's used well, volcanic tail. It's mostly buried now, but that's where a lot of we did a lot of refugee work out of Rwanda and Burundi during that civil war. But it needs a lot of help. It needs a lot of help. It's had a lot more Christian witness than where I am, but it still needs another look. Somebody else? Yes, sir. You know.
two things. First, how do we contact you to deal with this?
What I can do, I've got a non-NIC business card, and you just keep me secure. My wife's email address is on there. Jesse's email is on there. It's a prayer card. I don't mind you having it. And it has, you can be able to tell which business, which address is mine. Mine has a secure email. And so you're welcome to take one of these prayer cards with you. Just keep my name secure. And you can contact me through that. All right?
And two, what would summer or semester look like in the U.S.?
Here's where you go. Syria, why don't you go see? We have one family there now. There's a young lady. Is she in this room? She's not in. Christy Olson is here with us this weekend. A couple years ago, her husband died, and Dan Olson's wife died in North Africa. And now Christy and Dan are married with 8 children. Under what age? 11 years of age. Yeah. And Christy is here, and Murray and Dan are getting ready in a few months to move to Damascus. Peggy and John have helped them. They're going to take those 8 kids and go back and so talk to them about Syria. Syria is open, but Syria has been a very secular Muslim country, but with what's going on in Iraq, Bashir is playing the conservative Muslim card right now. But right now, Syria's, yes, John?
We hope to have a project in Latakia, Syria this summer.
All right.
So it's already on the site. We should hear about that within the next week or 10 days. We're waiting to hear from the cultural attache in Damascus. And then hopefully by 2005, in Damascus.
Beth and I got to go there the first time a few months ago, and I fell in love with Damascus. I've been to Israel, and a lot of the holy sites there just leave me cold because of commercialization. When I walk down the street called the Strait in my Eastern Wall, and went down to the traditional place that was Ananias' house, I had a spiritual encounter with God. It was pretty awesome. The other place you talked about? Saudi Arabia. Full-time pagan. Very hard to get in there. I only know of 8 believers. Saudis, like all the other Gulf states, are about a third of the population are Saudis. The other 2/3 are expatriate workers, Pakistanis, Indians, Bangladeshi, stuff like that. George Bush, president himself, could not go to Saudi Arabia and have a Bible study. There's one church that I know of in Saudi Arabia tied to the Amoco oil company. No one else is allowed to worship. Filipinos and others that worship underground, just with Filipinos, are put in jail and kicked out of Saudi Arabia. That's a tough nut. We're getting ready to divide it in a number of pieces. We're going to go after Sunnis. We're going to go after Shia. We're going to take the southern Saudi piece from the Yemeni side, and then we're probably going to divide Riyadh and a couple of major cities and give them their own strategies. But it's a tough nut. It's just hard to get in there. Now, I mean, you go to Saudi, they have shopping centers, they have TGI Fridays, they have Starbucks. You know, it's not a hard place to live unless you want people to hear about Jesus. It's tough. And so we're going to have people in there on very creative platforms. You've got to be able to provide service. They just don't let you hang out. I know, like over across in Qatar, and I don't you all rush to sign up. One of my Frontiers buddies, who was poorer than dirt, is now teaching English in a high-class Qatari school, and they're paying him $70,000 a year. And so that might be, you know, getting in and doing university students, and if you've got something like a real good degree, there's real possibilities. But you've got to have a reason to get to be there, and you've got to work your platform. And the whole Gulf States. The problem is, when you go to the Gulf States and you look at Gulf Arabs themselves, they're just in a few regions. You know, Qatar has, like, I think, I'll get this wrong, but the spread will be about the same. There might be 400,000 people in Qatar, but only like 80,000 of them are Qataris. And so you can go there, and what you'll do, everybody will get distracted, because you'll find Pakistanis that have come to Jesus, Bengalis that have come to Jesus, Indians that have come to Jesus. And if you go there to focus on the Qatari or the Emirati or the Kuwaiti, you know, or the Saudi, you'll get distracted by those who actually come to Jesus, and nobody will stay focused on those who've never had a chance to hear. But those Saudis are full-time pagans. They're not part-time. Yes, ma'am.
You think of some of the countries and knowing some of the Saudis,
That's why I have two names. One of them's a good Nick and the other one's a bad King. That is a good question. I won't take one of the things that you'll find is that if you, let's just say, if it's in a non-responsive area like a Saudi or a Somalia where there's so much suffering and death and everything, if you retain your humanity and your compassion, you almost become an emotional basket case. And if you lose that, where's the Christian witness? And so it's just a constant struggle. I have a journeyman right now that's getting ready to come home. And I said to Justin, how's all the poverty and the leprosy and stuff affected you? Because it looks like to me, no, I didn't say this out loud, because it looked like to me Justin got hard. And he says, well, some days it bothers, some days it doesn't bother me, and other times I go home and cry my eyes out. Not too good. That's pretty balanced. That's normal. And what you don't want to do, folks, and you take it from your uncle's head, the problem I have with missionaries and all of us who do relief work is what you'll do, you'll live in these messed up environments, sin-filled environments, and you'll allow the abnormal to become the norm. And then you'll take too great a risk, or you'll become a non-witness. And so one of my jobs that I do with people is I break that cycle of abnormality, and I don't allow you to let the abnormal become the norm. But it's a constant struggle. You women particularly, what you will do, these Gulf States, Yemen, Saudi, Kuwait, are very hard on women, and most of our women are not lasting 6 to 9 months before they have it. They hate anything that's male. And I'll come in and they'll just wring me out. And I'll say, you know, I'm not doing this, but you're one of them. You know? Because I'm just a male type person. And it's hard. And the fact of the matter is, we have not found so far that Western women are willing to give up their civil rights in order to share the gospel with Muslim women who have no human rights. But you hear your Uncle Ken. That's a hard word, isn't it? So far, Western women are not willing to give up some of their civil rights that they've won hard over 200 years in the West, in America, other places. You're not willing to give up your civil rights in order to share Christ with women who have no human rights. You have, let's do some practical things. If you were to come and work with me in Yemen, this is the extreme. You're going to cover. You're going to wear gray or black all over. You're going to go out. You'll never go out by yourself. You'll go out with other female friends or with your husband or your brother or whatever. You will not look a man in the eye. You cannot teach a man. You cannot have authority over a man. And in every sense of the word, in the Gulf States particularly, you're going to be a second-class citizen, and there's nothing I can do to change that. And most women have a lot of difficulty with that. But But what we're finding right now, if you take it to the bank, our interviews and research shows that out of every 100 Muslim believers in the world, 95 of them are men and only 5 are women. Muslim women have no access to the gospel of Jesus Christ, because what we're doing, witness is taking place in almost every situation, is by men to men, and I cannot witness to Muslim women. It's not allowed. And Muslim women have no access to the gospel today. In Yemen, 90% of them cannot read or write a word. The list can go on and on and on. In Islam, a man can have up to 4 wives. How many husbands can a woman have? One at a time. In Islam, most places a woman cannot vote. In many places, she cannot drive a car. She cannot hold a job where she supervises a man. She cannot be in public without a female friend or a husband. In Islam, a woman's testimony is worth 1/3 of a man's. When you die, if you are a brother and sister, and I'm your father and I die, you get 3 times the inheritance of your sister does. When he dies and goes to paradise, he gets 40 virgin concubines to take care of your ever needs. Nothing, we don't know what happens to you when you die. We do know that if you die and you are a virgin, you are guaranteed paradise, but you have to marry because you can't even enter paradise unless you have a husband. Now, what I'm finding in this research that I can't prove, and it's this, and